Hi, everybody. The following episode for today contains spoilers for the movies La La Land and Rogue One. So if you haven't seen those movies yet, stop what you're doing right now. Stop on the freeway. Pull up Netflix. Watch both of them back to back while all the cars are honking and racing around you to get to work. And once you finish them, you can turn on your car again, hit play, and you can enjoy our conversation. Enjoy.
Dias, Marquez. Dias, Marquez.
They call it the Death Star. It's capable of destroying an entire planet.
If the Empire has this kind of power, what chance do we have?
The question is, what choice?
We have hope.
Are you with me?
All the way.
Save the Rebellion! Save the dream!
Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Rated PG-13.
Do it again. Hello, everybody.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
Welcome to the Us Podcast.
Why are you whispering?
A podcast about us.
It's all of us, bro.
Yeah, and we're here with another episode. And actually, today we have a very different style of episode mm-hmm. that we're trying out.
Changing it up for you folks.
Yeah, folks with an X. I think we're going to call this segment Love It, Hate It Movies, mm-hmm. where I pick a movie I love and Chris hates, and Chris and Chris picks a movie he loves and I hate.
Yep.
And we watch them. And we talk about them.
Let's talk about how we came up with this idea. We were both. I was driving. We were driving around after a party, and we were just talking about movies that I liked. And then, like, I hate that movie. And then you talked about one movie. I'm like, yeah, I hate that movie. Like, that should be. That'd be a great segment.
What? And then we had like, but what? What about this part? It's like, I don't know. I just thought that blah 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 blah.
And we had like a couple movies that we wanted to do, and we were gonna do two for this mm-hmm. episode. But I think for this one, we're gonna try it out with just one movie
and see if we have enough to talk about. But if all the other episodes of the Us Podcast are any indicator, me and Chris can talk a lot. So
yeah.
I think we'll be okay. But what we're doing is we're watching a movie. And then we're recording this segment, and then we're going to watch the second movie. So the first movie we saw was
Rogue One, A Star Wars Story.
Yay! Which is the movie I love mm-hmm. and Chris isn't a big fan of. And this, me and Chris actually have a little bit of history with this movie.
Yeah.
It goes back to when we were in this film group together. I think Rogue One had just come out or something.
Yeah, it had just come out, yeah.
And so, someone mentioned the movie, and I was ready to be like, oh my God, that was such a good movie. And then Chris was like, yeah, fuck that movie. It was so fucking dumb. And then this other guy was like, yeah, oh my God, I couldn't believe how stupid and generic and flat every yep. character was. And I was like, I was sitting there, and I don't know, you look shocked. I don't think I said anything, because I was like, I'm not about to just be like, well, I thought it was a good movie.
You're like, I'm going to save that for Train Spotting later.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, but I was really taken aback that y'all didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was great.
Uh-huh.
And watching it again, I didn't know how I was going to feel, because I hadn't seen it before. Like, I haven't seen it after it aired in theaters.
Yeah, me too. I haven't seen it since I went to go see it in theaters with my family, my brothers and dad.
But I am happy to say and happy to announce that I still love this movie, and I think it's a fantastic iteration and addition to the Star Wars canon.
Cool.
And it might be... It's probably...
Are you going to rank it?
Yeah. It's easily top 5, maybe top 3. Mm. I don't know yet.
Interesting.
If anyone wants some trivia as to what my top 2 are, Revenge of the Sith, and then...
Revenge of the Sith is your number one?
Yeah, because it holds a lot of, like, childhood memories.
Oh, yeah, stuff. Okay. I see how that factors into.
It was the first Star Wars movie I saw in theaters and stuff. Mm. So, Revenge of the Sith, number 1. Empire Strikes Back, number 2.
Yeah.
Rogue One, number 3. Boom.
Right.
So we're going to talk about Rogue One, directed by Gareth Edwards. How did you feel watching it a second time?
Well, Before, well, I'll just open with it and then okay. I'll get into my backstory. So watching it again, because you know that I remember as soon as I left the theater, I went on a fucking tirade. I said, this movie's a piece of shit. And people were just about to be like, oh, for real, bro? Like, I'm just about to watch it. And I honestly thought like I was like warning the public before they got to see it. Like, I thought this was going to be like a major, like I thought this was going to be what Solo ended up becoming, like a major disaster that everybody didn't go see and everything. I felt like I caught it early. But then, you know, after people had seen it, they're like, I loved it. Yeah. So I'm like, what? And that's when I realized.
How could you like this piece of shit?
So point is, I hated this movie. Me and Brandon, we did. But watching it again, I didn't hate it as much, but I still think it's kind of, it's fine. I mean, I don't like now when people say Rogue One, I'm not going to like roll my eyes or like groan from like how terrible the experience was. Like as I was telling Angel, I said, we were like 20 minutes into the movie, I'm like, yeah, okay, by this part me and Brandon, we gave up and we were like, do you give a shit about anything that's going on? We're like, no. So we spent the rest of the movie trashing it.
It was so early on in the film. I was like, this is the part where you gave up before anything happened.
And then like I was watching it in 3D, so I took off my glasses. I'm not gonna watch this shit.
you forced it was like a perfect storm of how to hate a movie. Yeah. Watch it in 3D, take your glasses off, watch it with your brother,
and then just make fun of every line and like every,
which is what Chris did the second time. Chris was just making fun of it.
But I was watching. I wasn't being annoying. I was like, I was like shaking my head to myself, like remembering like, oh God, this scene, or like, oh, there's this. And then Angel, like, I was trying to be discreet. Angel's like, shut up, Chris. I'm like, I'm not saying it. And then I started being like open about it. But
Chris would legit just be like, oh, this scene coming up is so dumb. And I'm like, who cares? So what? So what if it's dumb? Yeah. And then some things I'll be like, yeah, like Chris would not even say anything. And I'd just be like, yeah, Chris, I get it. It's a dumb scene, okay?
Like, I didn't even bring up that. It's a stupid line, but that's not even what I was going to.
I was like, look, the fucking octopus. Yeah, it's dumb. Okay, I get it.
I'm the pilot. Chris. Yeah, but I thought it was fine. I again, like, it was nice to see it in, like, real. Because that's the thing. I don't like watching movies in 3D that much because it's too dark. And so watching it now in, like, its full color. And then, but here's the thing too. I also have to say, I only partially like followed the story because I was like, wait, what are they doing there? And then Angel's there.
Actually, they're there to get the plants. They're there for Galen or so. And I'm like, oh, okay. But see, I'm like, okay, but
it's why? So like, that's the obvious thing. Like,
to you maybe, and maybe to other people. Maybe I'm just dumb. But the thing is, my problem with it still is that the story is just so convoluted. I get it, like. When they pitched it, when I first heard about this movie, I got really excited. Because first of all, I thought it was going to be fun. I thought it was going to be like a fun little, like a Star Wars heist movie about stealing the Death Star plans. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds fun. That sounds like, you know, Ocean's 11 in space. But then you get this. It's like a war movie. And it's like with these like misfit characters that are kind of like soulless and not that fun. Like, they're interesting. Like, now that watching it again and having you kind of like explain and hold my hand through it, I was like, okay, I get what they're, now I understand what they're trying to do here. And I was like, all right, yeah, that worked. Like, this character is kind of interesting, I guess. But still though, it was just like, it doesn't, my problem with these Star Wars anthologies, same problem I had with Solo, is that they shoot them so grimly, and it's like they're like sucking the life and fun out of like Star Wars movies. Because I know because Star Wars movies aren't like silly fun, they're not schlocky either, but I think these take themselves a little too seriously. I think that's the only thing that annoyed me about it. It's just like they take this mythology so seriously, and I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just, I guess a good example for me, like a good example of a series that does that, takes their mythology seriously, but still makes it somehow fun, is Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know what, and I don't know.
I knew that was coming.
I don't know what it is. Like, I honestly don't know what it is, because there's moments-ish of humor in there, but it's not like this kind of Star Wars humor. I don't know.
I mean, they had humor in Rogue One, too.
No, I'm saying, like, but Lord of the Rings doesn't lean on too much on the humor. Like, here they kind of lean on it to keep people interested. No. Like, with that, that's why they have that robot character walking around with his one-liners,
this
you know?
This is what I'll say. I think Rogue One is the most serious of all the Star Wars movies. And I think the only, like, funny character is the robot.
K2SO.
K2SO. I think he's the funniest, and I think he's necessary to offset the grimness of the thing.
No, that works. I'm just saying, like, I think, I don't know, and I liked the idea of, like, when I saw the teaser, the with the siren and everything. I'm like, okay, a dark Star Wars movie. Like, what's this going to be like? And mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be like, so I remember there was a reviewer that said, it's cool because now it's a Star Wars film that looks like a war movie. And I'm like, all right, that sounds badass. But then, I don't know.
I think they succeeded. I will say that. I think they succeeded.
Like, no, it definitely did succeed. And I think, you know what it is? I think a big part of it is just the music. I think the music doesn't do anything for me. Because, like, aside from the Star Wars themes, you know, most of it's just like, dun-dun, 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 dun-dun. It's like, like, this is just, like, stock. Like, you just saved, this is saved from a session with John Williams when he's just, you know what I'm saying? I think
he's just riffing.
Yeah, yeah. This is him before he does it.
It was his warm up.
These are the tuning, tuning the instruments. No, but I don't know. This is kind of all over the place. But I think if you're trying to do something serious, I don't know. There's something to following the Lord of the Rings model. And the thing is, people have been trying to copy like that style of movie. But I think why that one was so well executed was just because like that was Peter Jackson's like dream project, so he put everything into the music, into the costumes, even to like little details in the, so I don't know, I know that these are, you know, for as much as people enjoy it, these are products, so they have to rush them out pretty fast, and there is good work in there, but I don't know, for me it just doesn't do it, it just doesn't do anything, sadly.
Okay. I do think that as a Star Wars war movie, like I think it does its job.
Uh-huh.
Especially that stuff in the beach, like
I did enjoy. Yeah, more than I did last time.
Everything in the beach is so well made, and you're like, I'm watching fucking Saving Private Ryan in space. You know, like mm-hmm. that's how it felt like to me. I will say, one of my biggest issues that it was more of an issue this time than it was the first time, and you mentioned how Chris's first criticism was when the first title card to tell us like what planet we're on, he's like, this is when I knew I was gonna hate this fucking mm-hmm. movie. And I was like, man, what a stupid criticism. But I will say that this shit jumps around a lot. Like, they go to a lot of planets, it's all these different scenarios, and it's just so, I don't know. I don't think it's confusing, but it's just like, what's the point?
Well, let me tell you why because I didn't get to elaborate when we were watching it. But the reason, like, okay, so I guess for people that probably didn't understand what we're talking about. So, you know, how, like, usually movies, like, and other sci-fi movies, they'll show a planet and then you see, like, on the side, like, this is planet Ishba, population, whatever, like, shit like that. So they have that in Rogue One. Like
Yavin 4.
Yeah, the Yavin 4, other planets and shit. And I think the reason I winced when I saw that. I think it's just because I'm like, oh no, like this isn't a Star Wars movie. I'm like, this is like, I don't know. It's just like, it just felt like, oh, this is generic sci-fi movie with the Star Wars banner. I'm like, ugh, like this is whack. Come on, like stick to the, I know you're trying to do something different with these anthologies and that's cool. But I don't know. I think also, and this is really dumb, this is also just like a director thing, the placement of the words, like on the corner. I don't like that. Like I like how Guardians does it. Like the font matches the look of the planet.
Or like Civil War, where it's just like that big.
Yeah.
Big
yeah. Like text. That's something stylistic. I don't know. Because I'm a very stylistic person. So I because you said, so you don't like knowing where you are. I like, it's not, I said, yes, just to appease Angel. I'm like, it's not that. I didn't like how like generic it looked, and like even the Rogue One title, I'm like, dude, this looks like iMovie. And that's the main criticism of, like, I read that, but like, but it does, it looks like iMovie. Like, you just like, here's a template for your Star Wars movie.
Your Star Wars template.
You could write in whatever you want, and you could write in like genius.
But, yeah, but then again, like if you do it any differently, people are gonna complain, like, that's not Star Wars. They complained for this movie not having a title scroll.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think that's the hardest thing about making a Star Wars anything. It's like, you have to appease, you have to both be a movie and be a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And sometimes that shit conflicts with each other.
Oh, yeah. People saw that a lot with The Last Jedi, especially.
Which is another movie I fucking hate. What are you?
Oh, you hated that movie?
Fucking terrible.
You know what's funny? I remember when we left, me and Brandon really enjoyed it. Like, or we liked it, but I you know what? I have not seen that movie since, and I own it. My mom bought it for me for Christmas, and I've never had like an inkling to watch it again. And I've watched repeated criticisms of that movie, and I'm like,
Chris likes Last
like,
Jedi.
No, I'm like, I guess they made a good. I don't know how I feel about it. And that's the thing. I was actually gonna say, watching this movie, I wanted to drop this.
Yeah.
I think I just don't like Star Wars anymore.
The
Force Awakens was a fun phenomenon to be a part of because everybody was excited. You know, and I was a casual fan. I like. I'll be honest. I used to pretend I was like a bigger fan than I really was, but I really was just like a casual fan. Like, I just wanted to be a part of the hype.
Yeah, you had a Star Wars shirt in your behind the scenes photos for Bad Labor.
Yeah, exactly. But I see that was right after, this was before this movie came out, and this was right after Force Awakens. Okay. So I was like at the peak of my fandom, and I was reading all this stuff, and I was remembering, I'm like, you know, I remember leaving The Force Awakens angry for spoiler for how they killed Han Solo. I'm like, they took him out like a bitch. I'm like, I hated that. I hated how stupid he looked when he got stabbed.
He's a fucking old man. Yeah, you can't really look cool when you're an old man.
No,
dying.
But that's a whole other subject. But the thing is, I think I was just, what I liked most about, what I realized about my Star Wars fandom is that I just enjoyed the hype during that era, because everybody was feeling it, dude. I'll tell you a story. I was PAing at the IHOP. We were doing a shoot at the IHOP in Hollywood. I was PAing there, and we were literally a street away from where they were having the premiere. The day they were having the Force Awakens premiere, like, I was that close, and you could just feel everybody, all the regular customers, they're going in talking about it. Like, you could just hear it in the air. It was the thing everybody was talking about. Harrison's coming back. Like, I was watching interviews like on during lunchtime. And like, to be a part of like a cultural phenomenon like that, like, was fun. But I realized I just liked the interaction with other people more than the films themselves. I do like The Force Awakens now. Like, after watching, I'm like, yeah, besides that scene, I like moments of it. I enjoyed The Last Jedi. I don't know if I like it. I have to watch it again. But this one, like, it just kind of made me realize, I'm like, maybe I'm not as big of a fan as I thought I was.
You know, I noticed that because there was moments where, there was moments for the Star Wars fan that I reacted to, and you were just like, meh, oh yeah, I forgot that was in there.
Like, here's the thing. Like, I knew what they were. Mm-hmm. I knew what it was, because I'd been following, and I remember, like, because I knew people were going to, like, check me on it, so, like, I did I watched all the Star Wars Disney, too. So I knew all the, I understood all the references, but they didn't,
they
like,
had no effect on
they didn't, like, they had no effect on me, and also because I'm also, like, jaded too, because I watch, if anybody wants to check out like great movie criticisms channel on YouTube, it's Red Letter Media. They trash this movie, and I was like, yep, love it. But it's true. I'm like, they're like like, Star Wars, do you remember AT-STs? Mon Mothma's back. Star Wars, I'm gonna come. And it's like, yeah, that was this whole movie.
Yeah,
like, people were just freaking out about, like, and like, again, like, that's the thing. I'm like, I guess I'm just going to kind of retreat to, like, I'll go see the movies, because I do like being a part of the big crowds and everything, but I just realized, like, I'm not that big of a fan anymore. I guess, you know, I just liked being involved with the crowd. It took me kind of a while, like, watching this movie kind of cemented that. I'm like, yeah, I like the imagery. I mean, these movies are iconic, you know, the ships are fucking easily recognizable and everything, but, like, the story itself and, like, not the story itself, but, like, the movies themselves, like, aside from, I love the prequels. I mean, love the originals.
That's going in. That's opening the episode.
I love the prequels. No, I love the originals. Like, I think that those are, like, I genuinely love those as, like, films, but everything after that, I'm like, don't really care for it.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
I think that might be the biggest reason why I gravitate towards it more than you. But I also, there's some criticism.
But you're also conditioned to like these movies too, because you follow Marvel, so you're used to convoluted plots. I like my stories to just serve one purpose like a bigger thing.
I think I just pay attention when movies are happening, and Chris is just like, this doesn't make sense, and I'm like, really? Because he just said, like, there's a moment, go explain to me what he's doing there and where he's going. I was like, he's the fucking pilot that defected, and he's gonna go see the leader of the extremist rebels. Really? I was like, yes. I was like, how do you know that? I was like, they just fucking said it. They said it.
That's true. And that's another thing I wanted to address about just, like, general filmmaking. Like, I mean, you're right. I'm sure they did just say it, but it's just the way they compose it, the music. I'm telling you, like, everything has to do with everything. So that being said, there's so much fucking going on. So much shit's happening in the background, and they're like, this is a pilot of blah 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 blah, and so you're paying attention to that, but I'm kind of like ADHD, so I'm just like looking at everything in the background.
Ooh.
And I'm just and then, like, it moves on to the next thing, like, wait, what are they doing here? And you're like, they just said it, like, but I missed it. And I think that should just go for everybody that is interested in making films, it's like, especially big movies, they have to explain things to you, and you have to find a good way for everybody to get, again, not in like a not in the audience a stupid kind of way, but just like, I don't know, make the points more clear. Like, don't have such deep, gravelly voices when you're talking, because I needed subtitles to finally understand this movie.
Boo. So you just watch every movie with subtitles. And then
nah, but I don't like doing that. I actually like to challenge myself to like, understand. But yeah, I will admit, that's kind of, like, one of, like, the little defects I have, like, when it comes to watching movies. Sometimes it takes me, it's weird, but sometimes it just takes me a couple watches to fully get a movie's plot. So, like, especially with a movie like this, where it was just kind of like, for me, it's just like,
there's all over the place. Yeah, there's a lot happening. I'm going to burp again.
Oh, burp counter number one.
There's a lot happening in this movie. I will give you that. And maybe it was because I've already seen it that I could follow more easily. Mm. But I truly believe that it did a decent job, like, telling you what's going on. But then again, like I said, a big criticism of mine is that they go to too many places to do too many things. It's like, we're here in this beginning, and then we're here, and then we have to go here to talk to him, and then they tell us, well, we need to go here to get him, but then he tells us we have to go here for this. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
It's like it's just like missions in a video game, you know? It doesn't feel like there's a natural, I mean, they go everywhere for a reason, but it feels less like an adventure and more like a...
Yeah, we got just like a checking list. Like, checking off this planet, checking off this, we're checking off this. Yeah, that's the thing. There's no, like, fun. There's no, like, ooh, we're here doing it.
I mean, I had fun. Don't get me wrong. I had a lot of fun while watching it.
I like the action scenes. That's like why...
I love the characters, too. I think there's some really good, like, moments. I think Diego Luna does a good job at being the fucking Latino Han Solo. Chris doesn't agree. There's like, the first time you see him, he kills two stormtroopers and then kills the guy that gave him information. Uh-huh. And Chris is like, I'm so cool. And I was like, yeah, he is fucking cool. Like, I think that moment cements, it's like, not your grandma's rebel. Like, that's what it felt like to me. It's like, ooh, he kills people.
I bet I saw it coming. And maybe just because I'm used to, like, the typical, like, movie. No, but I remember even when I watched him, like, he killed them. Yeah, I saw that coming.
Well, I think it was cool. I think it was a good.
I liked Diego Luna a lot, but I don't think he has the same charisma as a Harrison Ford. So it's weird that people comparing him to Han Solo, because, like, this dude, like, in the beginning, he's all like, what is going on, and like very angry, and so when he suddenly when the stormtroopers are like looking for the dude that gave him information, he's like, don't worry, I'll protect him. I'm like, you shifted, you're gonna kill him. There's no way you're gonna be that nice all of a sudden.
The thing I also don't like the comparison to Han Solo, because Han Solo was never aligned with anyone, especially in part four. Diego Luna is like clearly a rebel, you know, like he's, like he mentions later in the movie, he's been in this rebellion since he was 6 years old, which Chris is like, oh, all of a sudden, like, you're gonna try to give us a backstory to this.
It was
guy?
Just like, it was such a line, you know. It's like we need a line for him to say so that you can give him.
I will tell you this: he said that to explain to Jin, the main character. If you haven't seen Rogue One, it's like, it's that moment where he just kind of tells her, like, make a decision and, like, stand for something, you know, because she's been...
Now when it's convenient for you or something like that, didn't he say?
Yeah. It's like, we can't just pick sides when it's convenient for us. Like, he's had no choice but to be a rebel his whole life. And Jin has just kind of been like, I don't want to be a rebel, but, like, the Empire's also bad. And, like, she's just been floating aimlessly through her whole life. And then all of a sudden she cares about the rebellion, and that's what pisses him off. And he's like, you can't just choose when to care about things, you know, when it's convenient for you. Like, some people have no choice. And I thought that was really cool. And there, I think this whole movie is about people without a choice, you know, the dad.
Wow, yeah, you're philosophical on a Rogue One.
I fucking love, dude, because, like, I don't know, I saw all this. Like, the dad had no choice. He had to either build the Death Star or die, and he chose to build it. He felt like he had no choice but to build it, but in building it, gives the rebels that hope to fucking blow it up one day. Fucking Diego Luna's character, I forgot his name, but he has never had a choice. He's been a rebel since he was a kid. The two fucking guardians of the wills, they kind of have no choice because everything they stood to protect, like, is gone. The Order of the Jedi is destroyed. Like, they have no purpose in life anymore. So why not go with these people? Like, it's just a bunch of people. It's just a bunch of, like, broken people, a bunch of people that have nothing to lose. Like, that's what, I think that's another line that they say. It's like, this whole movie is about people with nothing to lose, pretty much.
Here's the thing that I wanted to also make a point about the fact that, because we find out that Jyn Erso, who's played by Felicity Jones, she's the lead girl in this movie. Her dad, he tells her via hologram that he put a weakness into the Death Star. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw that, I for some reason it didn't set well with me, but then I saw a video explaining why, and I'm like, oh, see, that's why. When you watch A New Hope, there's that moment where they get the Death Star plans, like, there's like a weak spot. Mm-hmm. You just think that it was like an architectural flaw that they like discovered, mm-hmm. and like that's a moment for like Luke to become a man, you know, not be a boy anymore. But then to just find out that like it was like Galen Erso, the father, just kind of like throwing like Luke a softball. I feel like it weakens the impact of the whole thing, because he's like, that wasn't like Luke's moment. It's not Luke's moment anymore. Like, it was a predetermined thing.
It is Luke's moment.
Nah, but it was someone a predetermined thing that this guy did just because he was mad at the rebels or the Empire.
It was never Luke's moment, because he wasn't the one that was like, he wasn't the only one charged with blowing it up. Like, there was, everyone was trying to, but Luke is the one that did it. Luke was the one that got, like, the closest. Like, it wasn't like, all right.
But it was a suicide mission, because, like, no, like, the reason Luke did it is because he used the fucking Force.
Well, yeah.
None of the other pilots would have been able to do it. And that's why it felt so special in A New Hope, because, like, it was really only up to him, because he was mentored by Obi-Wan to, like, use the Force. And when he shoots, it goes right into that hole. It was an impossible shot, and he did it. But now, it feels like... Like, I don't even know why they had to explain why it was there. You know, it's like, it couldn't just be an architectural flaw. It couldn't just be that they found.
Because people thought this was stupid. People thought that, who the fuck would build this big ass machine where this tiny hole blows up the whole thing? Like, it doesn't make sense. And now it makes sense, because the person that made it made it so if you blow this up, it blows up the whole thing. Like, I think it adds a whole other layer to Star Wars, where it's like, it's just like the rebels are constantly just grasping at straws to like defeat the Empire. Mm. And like, even when creating this fucking machine, the fucking dad, Galen Erso, gives them this one sliver of hope. And like the fucking film says, rebellions are built on hope. And so like the whole film is also about hope, and also the fucking 4, 5, and 6 are about hope. At the end of part 5, it feels like there's no hope, because fucking Han Solo gets put into
to the carbonite.
Yeah, and then Luke gets his hand chopped off, but somehow they hold on to hope, and they do it again. So I guess it works narrative.
You're right. Like,
I don't think it takes away.
It's not a stupid reason. It's just like, I think this just goes to like the thing that the reason people make prequels in the first place. Like, do we need to know like Boba Fett's backstory? Do we need a fucking did we need a reason for like some things? I think are just cool, because like, it's like, you know, I look at like especially the original Star Wars movies as like folk tales, fairy tales. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if somebody tried to explain why fucking Little Red Riding Hood couldn't tell that the grandma was like the wolf was disguised as the grandma. It's like, oh, she had poor eyesight, and this is how it happened. She was in a battle, and some lava got sprayed in her eyes, and that's why. It's like, can it just be...
Let's get Little Red Riding Hood's grandma's backstory.
Yeah, it's like, let's get the prequel there. It's just like, I feel like fables, these kind of stories, like, I like it when they leave certain things out, because it's just... It's not about that. Like, yeah, you're right. It does give it more of a reason, and now there's no room for people to be like, well, why would there be a stupid little hole in the big machine? But I don't know. I feel like everything needs explaining is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I get that.
And you know, like, again, these movies can exist, and like the beauty about life is you can choose to acknowledge them or ignore them. Yeah. And like, I would ignore this movie for a bunch, but I will say, thankfully having Angel like as the info button to be like, wait, what's going on?
Like, pause, hang on. So how did this go?
Well, you see, when George Lucas was developing this concept in 1976.
Yeah. No, but I will say I did have a much more enjoyable time, but I still think it's kind of run of the mill and generic.
You think it's a generic movie?
Yes, but the generic movie with Star Wars imagery. So
okay.
it's a little bit above a generic sci-fi movie just for the iconic imagery alone. But I didn't think any of the characters like you and I. You really made me see it in a new light when you talked about how like it's about hope and everything. But still, like none of the characters were fun. Like yeah. This time around, I actually knew who all their names were. I only knew when I first watched it. I only knew. And mind you, I watched it in a very bad way. Like, I tell you, I took off my glasses after the first 20 minutes, and me and Brandon were just, my brother, we were just, like, talking shit about it the entire way. Yeah, but watching it now, like, I was glad to know their names. I was glad to understand their reasons and where they came from. But still, it was like, I don't want to be, like, I'm not any more interested in watching their stories other than just this one thing. Like, they're just... I don't want to know any more about him.
Okay.
Less like a Han Solo or like a Luke Skywalker.
So you wouldn't see those two Asian guys prequel movie?
No.
You wouldn't see a Diego Luna prequel movie?
I feel like Diego, for as talented as he is, Hollywood is like grossly misusing him for what he could do. They're giving him the wrong roles, I think.
So would you watch this movie again? Like without, by yourself?
No.
Whoa.
Absolutely not. And I'm not going to lie, you know, because I like to joke about how I hate things or whatever. And like with my friend Adela.
I paused this movie for Chris to pee. And he's like, fuck, there's an hour left. I was like, so fucking what?
The good example of like what I usually do is like my friend Adela likes J. Cole. And like, you know, I like to, you know, just to tease people like about that when they like things that I don't like, I just kind of pretend that like I'm falling asleep or whatever. And like. With this one, I didn't have to pretend. Like, I was, like, at first I was kind of, like, pretending, like, oh, this is boring. But, like, at some point I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, I really am, like, exhausted watching this. And, again, that's just me. And you just heard me say, like, I guess I just discovered that I'm probably not a Star Wars fan like I thought I was. Which is fine. And, like, you know, I know that people love this movie. And here's what I will say. Watching this, and even though I was, like, really exhausted at the end of it, I now understood why people love it so much. Because at first, it just didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, dude, it's so blurry.
Dude, what the fuck? It's so out of focus.
It's so out of focus. I can't. But watching it and seeing the vivid colors and
there was some fantastic cinematography.
Great cinematography, yeah. Like great imagery. Like the action set pieces were actually like. There was one moment where like a ship crashes into a rock. I'm like, whoa! I was like, that.
Yeah, Chris legit was like, whoa! He like got taken aback.
So they were, you know, like
that cool scene where the fucking Star Destroyers fall on the.
Even in the theater, I like quietly said to myself because I don't want to embarrass myself in front of Brandon. I'm like, that's pretty cool. But I think everybody agrees on that Darth Vader scene.
Darth Vader scene,
even though it's just fucking like 15-20 seconds, it's the whole movie.
It's worth it. It's fucking amazing. That one, the Star Destroyers falling on the shield, is fucking dope. I just love space fights, so anytime there's fucking ships fighting with ships, I'm like, I'm fucking down. So that whole like beach, everything from the beach is fucking amazing. I will say my least favorite character, fucking Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah,
Saw Gerrera.
Save the dream.
Yeah,
save the dream.
It just sucks. The only good thing to come out of them going to the planet of Jedha or the city of Jedha—I don't even know.
I think it's a city.
Yeah, the only thing I like about it is that they find the two Guardian of the Wills characters.
Yeah,
like,
the Asian guys.
Yeah, they're super cool, and so I'm glad that they met them. Everything else on that planet city. Meh.
I will say, like I said, yeah, there were a lot of little nuggets of things I enjoyed, but yeah, I definitely wouldn't watch it again.
I will definitely watch it again.
Wow, dude, you have stamina.
And I will buy it on Steelbook, and it's fucking, and I'm telling you, third favorite Star Wars movie.
I remember when we were in the middle of watching this, I looked at you and I said, fuck, dude, how do you make a movie like this? And you're like, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah. I mean, like, like logistically. I'm like, logistically, would you, like, do you think you'd, like, would, do you ever see yourself getting to a place where you could potentially take on a movie, like, of this scale?
I think about it all the time.
Me too.
And I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think I'm ready for it. I would have to talk to a director like James Gunn.
Peter Jackson or
Taika Waititi, and just be like, how did you do it?
Yeah.
How did you go from this
little movies,
this movie about human people in the city, and how do you fucking make Thor Ragnarok?
Like a beast of a movie. Yeah. How do you do that? Like, and I'd like to think I would get there, but it would take a lot out of me. Like, if you see how Peter Jackson looked before he made the Lord of the Rings to after, it's like, fuck. Yeah, I think we even talked about this in the first episode. I was like, how do you prepare? Like, you wake up, you're like, okay, we're shooting this section of the castle.
Yeah, and the castle, like, scene. And then I said something. Yeah, amazing. Well, yeah. I still love it. Chris hates it a little less.
No, I don't hate it. Like, before, I used to just outright hate it. Like, I'd say, you're fucking idiot if you like Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not a real Star Wars fan if you like Rogue One, is what I used to say that. But, but I will say I don't hate it. I enjoyed it a little more.
But you would never.
And I understood it, which is a plus. But I would never see it again.
Okay. And
that's Sally Kathleen Kennedy, please hire me. Now for our next feature. La La Land.
Yeah. So we're gonna take a break right now, watch this piece of shit ass movie.
This perfect masterpiece. Shouts out to Damien Chazelle.
I will shout out Damien Chazelle, but you made a piece of shit movie.
And I want him as a guest.
I did. If you get him as a guest, I will tell him fuck La La Land.
Well, we'll see after we watch this.
Yeah, see you soon.
Goodbye.
You said it. You change your dreams and then you grow up.
This is the dream. It's very exciting.
Is that gonna happen every time?
I think so. It's
another day of sun. La La Land, rated PG-13. Select cities December 9th, everywhere Christmas Day.
Oh, no. It's actually. I don't do the whole thing.
Well, we just came back from watching La La Land.
Literally just right now. Yeah,
and I am tired.
Oh, I'm tired too. This has been an exhausting day.
It's been a long, exhausting day, but let's jump right into it.
Yeah. La La Land, directed by Damien Chazelle.
Well, I'll throw it to you first. Is there anything you want to know, about my... In it, my reaction.
This is the first time I watched it with Angel, and Angel's professed his hate for this movie for a long time. So it was really interesting to be in the same room and to look at his face. And he has like when he watches movies, he just kind of has like a regular, normal face. But this one, he had like an angry like a pouty face. I was like throughout the entire thing, I just kept like when he because he thankfully, respectfully, and I have to give Angel credit for this. He didn't make too much commentary. Like, and if he did, it was like. It was a joke where we were all involved. It wasn't just like a hateful, that's stupid.
Yeah, I was like, what a dumb seed.
Because there aren't any in it. But he was making this face, like this pouty face, like, oh my God.
And then I would do like hand motion.
Yeah, you did one like during the scene where like Ryan Gosling says, well, maybe you just liked me better when I was on my ass because it made you feel good about yourself. And then he goes,
like, what? Oh my God. We'll get into that scene.
So I want to hear it because everybody knows that I like it. So I want to hear from you firsthand because we've talked about this. But now after just seeing it again with me in the room, I'm curious. I'm very curious and very excited. So I'll throw it over to you.
The first thing I'll say is I think my opinions changed about Damien Chazelle winning Best Director. I think he deserves it. I think it was a really well-directed movie. Like, while watching it, I was like, man, this took a lot of planning, a lot of thought, and a lot of, like, manpower. Like, almost every scene and every, location is, there's just so much going on.
Yeah.
And this dude plays around with a lot of different ways of telling a story and ways of framing a scene that, like, I was pretty impressed. Like, I don't, like, the second viewing, I was just like, yeah, this is, like, really impressive filmmaking, I think.
Cool.
The biggest problem I have with it, well, there's a lot of problems I have with it. I think, okay, so let me just try to give a generalization of how I'm feeling about the whole movie. I think it's a well-made movie. I don't think it's my kind of movie.
Right.
And it's not, and it's not because it's a,
and that's not bad at all. That's that literally just goes down to taste. Like, just how we were talking, like, Rogue One, like, I don't think it's a bad movie anymore. I actually think it was fun, but, like, it's just, like, I'm not a fan. I don't, I realize I'm not a fan by watching it,
I think,
know?
And I think one thing does stay the same. I'm a burp again.
Burp number two.
Yeah. And I think, I still think it's a very problematic movie. And okay. I'll get into it now. But my biggest, like, filmmaking gripe with this movie is the breakup scene.
The dinner scene, right?
Dinner scene where they break up. I cannot for the life of me, like, believe that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It is so unbelievably forced and so unbelievably, like, contrived. That's why I did my whole hand thing. I was like, yeah. I was like, this is, like, miscommunication the movie. It's like, what are you saying that you don't, like, do this and this? Like, no, I'm not saying that. Well, it feels like you're saying it. Like, that was the whole conversation. Yeah. It was like, she says one thing, he misinterprets it. She says, I didn't mean that. And then he's like, well, I don't care. You're just an actress. Like, it's just, it was so, it just felt like, and here they break up. How are they going to do that? Have them just, like, insult each other.
Yeah.
But Damien, like, they're in the best places they've ever been. Like, they're both, like, chasing their dreams and doing what they love.
And they're succeeding
and they're having a nice dinner. Yeah, but, like, the movie's getting real long. Like, I need some conflict. It's like, they need a breakup eventually. It's like, but, dude, you didn't set this up for them to, like, have any flaws or conflicts or anything. I just, oh, fuck. Just, Ryan, just please, just, like, say something. Emma, Ryan, just, you know, just break up. Like, it just feels it feels like that was the direction. Uh-huh. Just be like, okay, this scene, you break up.
Yeah.
One question, why? And action. That's what it feels like. Like,
got it.
I was hoping, I was like, maybe I just saw that scene wrong the first time.
Uh-huh.
And I was really paying attention. I was like, okay, let me see if they have any reason to.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just miscommunication.
Yeah.
It was the whole, like, if they were just like, okay, relax, let me tell you what I really mean, and listen to me, and then you mm-hmm. talk. Like, I feel like that could
have been. Of course, the men talk first, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh my God. I feel like that could have easily been, like, I feel like the whole breakup could have been avoided if they just took the time to listen. And then some people have told me, like, well, that's the point. Like, they don't want to listen to each other. They're both very hard-headed. And it's just like, why is that only coming into play now, then? If they were both hard-headed, they should have had problems way before this. And so that's one of the biggest scenes, like, filmmaking-wise, I had a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then I was making that whole joke that throughout the whole movie. You like jazz?
You like jazz?
Because that's just like Ryan Gosling. What's your character? Well, I'm a jazz musician.
I love jazz.
Oh, great. Do you have any flaws?
I love jazz.
Like, his character is, I love jazz. His flaw is, I love jazz a little too much. And that's it.
I have to say, I actually 100%, well, I don't want to say 100%, but I actually really agree with you on those points. Again, I love this movie, but even when I first watched this, I didn't care. You know what? It's because I had never been through a breakup, like a legit breakup before. So when I watched it, I mean, I knew what they should, how they should play out regardless. But for this scene, especially because it was the way I watched it too. Like, much like how Rogue One, it was me and my brother. My glasses were off and I'm watching this out of focus Star Wars movie, just trashing it. When I watched La La Land, I was holding hands with someone I love. Aww. And we were just, like, gawking throughout the whole thing. So for that scene, I did excuse it, but even after like I worship this movie up and down from 2016 to mm-hmm. early 2017. You were very much around for that era.
She's like, oh my god.
But I remember when the movie came out on Blu-ray and everything, and like they put all the scenes on YouTube, and when I came to that scene, I watched it on YouTube and I looked at the comments, and everyone was like, this. And this was weird for me because I kept reading comments like, wow, this is so realistic. Like, this is such a great scene. Like, so well written and well acted. And I remember I thought, I actually don't think this scene's all that great. There was somebody who made a video essay and they put what a realistic conversation between a couple would look like. And they used La La Land as the bad example and as the good example of how an argument should go up and down and then down and then up for a little bit and then down and up. The Before trilogy, the last one, in fact, when they're in the hotel.
Beautiful.
There's that whole, you know what I'm talking about? There's that whole argument where they're in the hotel and like, bed. It starts off with them trying to like make love sex, and then it goes into an argument. And then there's like for like, they're arguing, then they're okay. And then they're arguing again. And then they're okay for a minute. Like a good 2 minutes. And it seems like, okay, it's over. But then he says something and then I'm like, whoa. Like when I saw that comparison, like, yeah, I have to agree. Like again, but the difference there is Richard Linklater was trying to do a real, character study on these two people, so it fits that movie, and that's why I didn't really care that this breakup scene didn't, because it's not about that.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, like filmmaker wise, it does feel like this is the scene where they need to break up. So here's, give them a reason.
Yeah.
And it's so it does puzzle me that big fans of the movie like love that scene. I never like it was never like the I never talk about that scene whenever I talk about why I love it. Like that's like the least. As you know, if I'm being like true in my criticism, like that's like the least
important.
That's the least effective moment to me. And even watching it again, I just thought, yeah, you know, this has got to happen. So there it is. There's that scene.
I do think I think that's the moment where the movie stops being kind of enjoyable for me.
Mm-hmm.
I found like I was super entertained with the first half. I was like, I was sitting there and I wasn't trying to hate it, but I was like, I know I have problems. And so I was sitting there and I was like, that was pretty fun. That was a good song. Yeah. I don't know if I like the beginning.
The opening number?
Uh-huh. It's just like, it's real cheesy, but that's the point, you know. Like,
it's supposed to invite you into the world of it, so that way there's no surprise. Like, all right, this is as big as it's gonna get.
Exactly.
So buckle up. There's, what was this? I'm sorry. What was the second point you made? You said the scene with Ryan Gosling, and then the.
I don't think I made a second point.
No, yeah, it was the breakup scene, and then. Do you remember, Melissa?
I don't think. No, I think I only talked about. I said I had multiple problems, but that.
No,
was
you.
Oh, then
you said it was. Problematic.
Oh yeah, I did say it was problematic, but I said I was going to get to it in a little bit.
But you said something else. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. We'll think about it. The beginning scenes, whatever. I think it was very effective in theaters for sure. Mm. Like I remember seeing it, and then just like boom, La La Land comes out. I remember everyone was like, yeah, like.
I was one of those people.
Like, Hollywood's back, baby! That's what it fucking felt like. And then, I'm trying to, think of some good
things. Well, I wanted to ask you something. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I don't like Emma Stone's acting.
Uh-huh.
I don't like... maybe I like her acting. I don't like her singing, 100%.
Uh-huh.
Do not like her singing.
Right.
And Ryan Gosling, I kind of don't like his singing either.
Right.
Here, there's some points that are very awkward, and they just not very good.
Yeah.
Their dancing's all right.
Yeah, yeah. I know that there's that joke that people make, like, the Ryan and Emma, they don't sing or dance very good. Like, that's the point. They're just regular people.
They're regular people.
But there was one thing when I was watching, because I watched all the La La Land interviews that, like, I fucking binged on when this movie came out. And there was one thing that I caught that I thought was kind of interesting to bring up. Like, it's... regardless of what people think about the performance, I just thought this was like a cool little subtle move that she made into the character. I remember she brought up how, if you notice in all the songs she has in the beginning, she like sing whispers, like, there's something here. And it isn't until Audition where she fully transforms into like the more confident woman that she's going to become that she belts out, here's to the fool. So she said she was purposely holding back, and like that was a choice her and Damon had made. I thought, regardless of how people feel that, how it turned out, I just like that someone would put that much like detail and attention into their character. But yeah.
Maybe she's just a bad singer.
Could be. But she's pretty good in that way. But so let's get to your the things that you found problematic about it. I'm excited to dive into that.
Okay, so a major issue that I've talked to Chris about before. I remember we were in Tom's and I was like, I brought up some points and you're like, what the fuck? What do you mean? And that was like one of the beginning of the of like us butting heads about this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's very problematic because I think it's a terrible representation of Los Angeles. About mostly about with the culture and the people in it. I think Damon Chazelle, not being from LA, has this view of LA that's very romanticized, very whitewashed,
right,
and very like, I'll say this is going to sound weird, but like very structure heavy, like, oh, these buildings, LA, these are buildings, this is LA, these buildings.
I've never heard that as a criticism.
Yeah, like, interesting. I think he sees LA as these buildings and these landmarks.
It's just, it's just landmarks.
Yeah, he sees it like a tourist. He sees it like a tourist sees it. And that's what the whole movie feels like, because you can see, at least when I see it, you can see the streets that are blocked off. You can see the places where
that you recognize.
Yeah, that's like, it's like I've been to Chinatown. It's not that empty, you know? Like, I've been here. It's not that empty. You can feel how artificial the whole movie is, because he blocks off streets, puts fake like extras, does this, does that. And for me, when I watch it, I can feel it. I can feel how artificial his version of LA is. And then the big thing that I've talked to Chris about is the race thing. And both my points kind of are connected, whereas I think Damon Chazelle captures LA as a tourist and is like structures and landmarks, but doesn't capture the culture. And for me, the culture is the people. And it's very weird for me how you mostly only see black people in the jazz club. Like, it's like, oh, we're in the jazz club, everyone's black except our two leads. And that's just a little weird.
I kept making a joke at Angel. I'm like, look, there goes another black person. Yeah. People were complaining.
One black person.
There goes another group.
There's another black person. But it's like, I never saw any Asian people. I never saw any other minority. Right. Like, and then we had a joke towards the end of the movie. The fucking nanny of Emma Stone's baby is Latina.
And
like,
then there's a trumpet player.
Oh, player named
his
Gonzalez.
His name was Eddie Gonzalez or something.
Yeah, fucking Gonzalez. And it's just stuff like this. Like, you can tell he doesn't care. That's not saying that's a bad thing. Well, it is a bad thing, but it's not. I don't think he did it maliciously.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think he was like, fuck minorities. Like, I think it's just something he isn't aware of, and that's a problem in itself. That the filmmaker isn't conscious of the place and the people he's representing.
Yeah.
I think that's my biggest gripe. Because, like, I'm going to say it again. It just feels like a tourist made this movie. Mm-hmm. It feels like someone's like, I love LA, but he doesn't really know LA.
Yeah.
And so he did it. He filmed it from a distance and he filled it with very, very beautiful people, very white people, except in the jazz club. Cause we all know black people love jazz.
And the couple on the bridge.
Yeah. And the couple on the bridge. And let's make the villain be black. And he's trying to ruin jazz, but the white savior hero, he's the real jazz hero. He loves jazz. This black guy?
That was your second point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's like, this black dude, he doesn't know what jazz really is. This white man, he's the hero of jazz.
That's the second point that you make about how Ryan Gosling is like, jazz. I'm going to say that.
Yes.
That was your second point. And I was going to say, watching it, because people have joked about it to death. So watching it again and like knowing all that, when I saw it, I'm like, wow, that's really all he talked. Yeah, like, I knew he talked about it and everything, but I'm like, people are really just like lampooning this. But when I saw it, I was like,
that's literally like, all that's his character.
All he talks about. So that was interesting.
That's one of the first things we hear him say. Yeah. His sister's like, I want to set you up with someone. His first question.
But Miles Davis.
Does she like jazz? And she's like, no. Well, then what are we going to talk about?
When I heard that line, I was like,
how fucking boring are you?
Yeah.
Like, Damon Chazelle's like fucking character sheet description likes jazz, hates people that doesn't like jazz.
I thought that was, yeah, okay, that I definitely have to give you some credit. Like, when I saw that a second time, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, like, I was really trying to think of other things. Both him and Emma Stone are pretty perfect,
right?
And like, there's there's almost no flaws. I think I didn't really see a reason for them to fall for each other either. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what they did to make them like each other.
Yeah.
They have a whole song about how they don't like each other. And then all of a sudden they like each other. Like, it's just, there was no moment where I felt like, yeah.
Well, I wanted to say to before we move on to your point about the problematic thing. You know, I it's true, and that I think it's why a lot of it's one of the reasons why a lot of people have a problem with that movie. Like watching it now and like hearing like have 13 podcasts later, you know, and then hanging out with you so much and reading all these articles and people still talking about it to this day about why they had problems with it versus Moonlight or whatever. Mm-hmm. Watching that, I understood for the first time. Like you're right, it is made by an outsider. But why it never bothered me and why me and Brandon like loved either way is like as I was telling you, and I still stand by this fact is like I think it's fine to like have room for different views of LA. Like I don't think that anybody's necessarily assigned this movie to be the quintessential LA movie. But I'm about to contradict it with the story I'm going to tell. But I just did want to say that like I think. There's definitely room for all kinds of LA movies. And right now, you know, of course, yes, right now, because none of us have gotten our chance to tell our stories yet. It is, for the meantime, like one of like the higher up LA movies. But even then, I never saw this as an LA movie. Like, yeah, there's some landmarks here and there. But I just thought that, I look at this as like a fairy tale that just happens to be set in LA. So that's why you're right. Like, Damien Chazelle is very much like, sees things structurally, as in look at this building, but like, you know, because he's not trying to tell a grounded story really, you know, it's a very heightened love story, so he's just taking the best, most populated parts of LA and just kind of like as an outsider. And I think he's not trying to hide the fact that he is an outsider. I think there's a reason why you see why there's so many LA jokes, or you know, all these like little like, or like there's the scene where that transitions from Emma and her friends going to this party, and you see like all these famous signs from famous LA. It's like this movie's a postcard. Literally, the movie opens with a postcard.
You're right.
So that's why I think this is just one type of LA movie, and why I get excited about watching these kinds of movies is because I think like especially why I love La La Land so much is because even subconsciously I didn't realize it, but I looked at it and I said, I know exactly what I'm going to take from this and make it brown. You know what I'm saying? Like I know what elements I'm gonna borrow and make and like give it to us. That's why I always joke about you. Like we were talking about this one feature I'm writing. I said I'm gonna borrow like this musical element and blah 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 blah. And like that, like it's like I look at it and it gets me excited because I'm like, all right, cool. Like the mass, sad to say, white majority have this, but here's what I'm gonna give and make for us, and then hopefully that inspires more even different types of brown filmmakers to borrow certain elements of color and musicalness and all that. I was gonna, but the story I was gonna use to contradict that, I don't think anybody's labeling this the quintessential LA movie, is the fact that Eric Garcetti, the year after this had premiered, that he did assign an La La Land Day, and they had dancers dancing on the big LA tower, and I was there, I was present for that with
Eric Garcetti. Come on. You're my boy.
That's actually where I took my first picture with Damien Chazelle. I don't know if you've ever seen that picture.
I have seen that. Yeah. The one where you said you like waited for him.
On the back. And we were just about to leave. We're like, nah, let's go. He's not going to come. And then there he goes. And we went and we talked and it was great. But yeah. I see what you're saying though. Yeah. Like,
I mean, when your movie's called La La Land, it's about LA.
Right.
You know?
But again, it's a postcard. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. But here's the point I'll make.
Sure.
I'll say, when you're setting your movie somewhere like LA, I think you as a director have a responsibility to portray that city accurately.
Sure.
And I don't think you did it. And I was thinking about this while I was watching it. If this movie was set in a more predominantly white place, I don't think I'd have a problem with it. Only because there's this movie I fucking love called Manchester by the Sea.
Can I say something really quick before you go on? I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you, because as I was watching you and like we're just watching white characters have problems, I looked at you and I was going to ask you, did it really bother you? Like, does this movie bother you just because it stars white people, when you like movies like Manchester, like fucking Call Me By Your Name and stuff like that? So
I love Manchester by the Sea, and that shit is blindingly white.
Like, right.
But it's because they film in a place that's predominantly white. I've never been there, but I'm going to assume that's what it is, you know? And this is a joke I have with our friend Ulysses, that I feel like filmmakers are filming in predominantly white places so people don't get on their ass for not having people of color in them. And filming in time periods where like doing period pieces, like, well, that's how it was. There was a lot of white people and the black people were house slaves.
I knew there was a reason I didn't fuck with period pieces.
Yeah, stuff like that. That's a theory that I have. I can't confirm or deny it, but I feel like it's like, hey, if I film this movie in a time where white people were the,
well, they're the masters.
Where white people are the superior race, then no one's going to get on my ass for doing that. Much like our boy Quentin Tarantino doing Django Unchained and being like, hey, that's how it was at that time. I don't like this word.
Like I wrote, I mean.
It's like, hey, I don't like this word, but I'm just being true to the times. Like, that's how it feels like. So you make a movie like Manchester by the Sea, and it's like, hey, don't you have a problem with it being super white? It's like, well, have you been there? Because it's very white. And so I'm just being accurate to the city I'm portraying. Damien Chazelle can't say that.
Right.
If I go up to him and I'm like, hey, why isn't there any Asian people in your movie? Like, there's no answer to that.
Right.
It's inexcusable.
Well, I would argue yes, and that's your right to feel that way. The last thing I'll say is I'm glad that at least you're not as like hateful to Damien. Like, because I remember before you used to say like, he did this on purpose. He didn't say that, but it was in that tone. Like, he knew what he was doing,
and
he specifically chose to leave out Latinos. And I'm glad that at least you're like, maybe he just didn't. But that's my point. It's not a part of his world. I've worked in offices, like specifically the production office that was a hand in making this movie. And dude, it's pure white people, and it is Los Angeles, and like, it isn't until you drive just a little bit further out into like the East Side that you start seeing some brown faces, but the majority of the time, like, this is what their LA looks mm-hmm. like. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You fucking hit the nail on the head. That's what Hollywood's LA looks like.
Yeah.
That's what they see when they think LA, when they think Hollywood. Uh-huh. And I think that's what I'm upset about.
Okay.
I'm upset that that's what they think it looks like. And that during this entire process, nobody thought to do anything about it, because it doesn't even cross their mind.
Right.
And that to me is the biggest sin of the movie.
Sin is a better word I like. Yeah.
Like the fact that this was made without any, with so much blindness towards how they're representing this city, and how at the end of the day, thousands of people said, yes, that is my LA. Because you know who was making it? A bunch of white people.
Right.
A bunch of white people saw this movie and they're like, that accurately represents my city. And I think that's the biggest thing I could say. Like, yeah.
So I'll ask you the question you asked me. Would you ever watch this film again?
I want to say I would watch the first half.
Okay, that's good. That's something.
Yeah, because like I was watching it after the breakup scene, and there's really nothing for me.
Uh-huh, right.
There was no big scene that stood out to me. There was no song that I stuck like, because for the last half they kind of repeat songs, except for that, I'm gonna say it, really boring song during her audition. The fucking Rainbow Connection song.
Somewhere we'll find it. The Dreamers. Wait, these are the same lyrics.
Dreamers.
God damn it, Damien Chazelle, you're gonna get sued.
La 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 land.
Damn.
Oh, Kermit the Frog. Nice. Too. So I would probably, you know what? I don't know if I would watch the movie again. I would watch specific scenes, dance numbers on YouTube, and I would listen to the soundtrack. Cool.
Yeah, I think, and that makes sense too. I think I would agree with you. Like, I would definitely watch it in its entirety, but this is more of a movie that I would revisit, not to like, I want to experience this again. I was like, no, let me watch this scene because I want to do something like this, and I'll go to YouTube and pull it up and whatever.
Yeah, because for all the shit I'm talking, it's got fantastic direction, fantastic costume design, fantastic cinematography. Like, it's a very well-made film. It's the politics of it and everything that surrounds it.
We just got to brown it up now. We just got to brown up.
Yeah, you got to make that brown La La Land. That East Los Land.
No. Cela Land.
Dude, that's what the scary movie parody would be.
Okay.
East Los Land.
Yeah.
It was so full.
With Michael Pena.
Yeah, yeah. It was so full. I like jazz. I like oldies food.
I like oldies.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what it would be.
One final thing I will say is, you know how we talked, you and I, we talked about, like, I think you asked me if somebody said that they didn't like Punch Drunk Love or whatever, would I care? I think this is one of the few movies that, like, if someone, like, if I watched it with a woman, and if she told me, like, God, I did not like this movie, like, that probably would bother me.
You'd be like, right there.
And then, right there, here, are you fucking kidding me?
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. It would bother me because I'm like, oh, were you the Moonlight people?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And not, and I love that movie, but it's, again, it's the politics of it. It's like, you just, you, I bet you didn't even, like, you just wanted to hate La La Land because that movie and Moonlight were pitted together. That's the only, I think that's the only movie I would ever get upset about. Like, anything else, like, you can not like Wolf of Wall Street, won't faze me. Punch Drunk Love, good time, won't care. But if you say, if you, like, even, like, okay, it's one thing to say, I didn't enjoy it, but it was okay. Or rather, like, I hated that. Like, if you vigorously hate, then I'm like, okay, we can't do anything.
Dang, that's your Seinfeld.
That's my Seinfeld. Yeah. I found my Seinfeld.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, all I'm gonna end it off also with saying, when the award for Best Picture was ripped out of the hands of the producers of La La Land and given to Barry Jenkins and his team, ooh, that's sweet. No sweeter victory has ever been made. That was the perfect way.
I was so sad.
That was the perfect way to end that night. Mwah! Sorry, Damien.
Dun, 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 with his one Oscar. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. And with that, we'll end the show. Hope you come back next week. This has been the Us Podcast.
And we'll see you next time. Directed by J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god.
That's perfect.
Awesome.
Goodbye, everybody. Tell us if you like this, if you want to hear more shows like this.
Oh, yeah, because there might be more.
Let's just end it.
Yeah,
bye.
We're ending it off. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for checking out the Us Podcast.
You can follow us on our Instagram at Us Podcast.
You can also follow us on our personal Instagrams. I am at @AngelISalinas_.
And you can follow me at @TheChrisCarmona.
Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcast from. Write us a review.
Please. That helps us out so much.
Say some nice things. Say some maybe not so nice things. Go ahead and tell us.
Bleats.
Bleats. All right. Bye. That sounded pretty good.